When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the 17th episode of the What If Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I am Jake from What If Football, as ever. And on day 13, we had yet more shocks. So many shocks that it is more not so much shocking anymore. Ghana gained revenge over Uruguay, kind of, for 2010. But it was the likes of South Korea and it was Switzerland celebrating, joining Brazil and Portugal in the last 16. And let us get straight into it. And yes, we are here at 5 a.m. every single day here on the Sports Social Podcast Network, anywhere really where you get your podcasts, and as well on YouTube with this World Cup Daily Podcast. We're going to see it right through to the bitter end, the day after the final, even on rest days, which there aren't any until this midweek coming up with the conclusion of the last 16. But regardless, we'll be here continuing to churn out that content for you. And we're also not stopping there. We're at patreon.com/whatiffootball with the World Cup Great Games podcast, chartering fantastic games from the history of the World Cup, as well as being on YouTube with Football Manager International Challenges, with Combined 11s, Predictors. We've got one out for the knockout stage tomorrow morning, so check that out. And as well, of course, What If Videos, Alternate Football Universes over there on YouTube as well. So without all that to speak about anymore, we head into Group G, where it's all ended. The group stages were over. 48 matches gone, and we have, not so many to go now. 16 left in the old pipeline there. And we'll talk about the match that had the most ramifications first. Of course, Brazil have got the firepower, the names, you know, everything, the celebrity about them. But the main shootout, so to speak, was Serbia versus Switzerland. And Serbia, they went into the game still smarting from 2018 when they were defeated in the last minute by Switzerland 2-1. And Switzerland took their place in the last 16. There was fallout, plenty of it, and the likes of Xhaka and Shaqiri both scored. Aleksandar Mitrovic scored for Serbia, and two of those scorers scored again tonight. And it was another 1-0 slender victory for Switzerland, which was the deficit, really, in Group G, as Switzerland finished second, Serbia finished bottom, and Cameroon, thanks to their wonderful surprise, finished third, unfortunately for them. And that really, it confirms the fact that we've not had a maximum points winning team at this World Cup. You may have thought Portugal and Brazil maybe had the best chance of it, France too, but all three of those changed teams dramatically, and they all three got defeated by the likes of Tunisia in France's case, Cameroon in Brazil's case, and Portugal in South Korea's case. Whether that will halt momentum, whether it will just help older players and squad players get a bit of a rest heading into knockout phase, well, we can only see over the next 4 days as we see it with the last 16 opening up today. So with Serbia and Switzerland, Vlahovic was in for Serbia. Meanwhile, Switzerland reverted to a four at the back with Fabian Scher and Jordan Shaqiri. They were back into the fold. And Serbia's threats really from the start was set pieces. We all saw how well they coped with set pieces against Cameroon the previous game. Nikola Milenkovic headed wide this time. They were set up more so in a 3-4-1-2 rather than a 3-4-2-1 with Sergei Milinkovic-Savic alongside Gudel in the number 8 role. Meanwhile, Tadic was afforded his usual number 10, but this time ahead of two central attackers in Dusan Vlahovic and, of course, Aleksandar Mitrovic. Serbia probably were the better team after the opening foray from Switzerland, really. Andrija Živković cut in and hit the post. A fantastic shot. It looked for all the world to be going in. And Serbia really pressed quite high in their front three. The wing-backs this time would press alongside with them. And it was Aleksandar Mitrovic, just as he did in 2018. Same mode of goal as well. A cross and a header, which put Serbia ahead back in 2018. It levelled things up here. And Switzerland were fairly sloppy after this. Serbian lads, they capitalised on it on the final third. It was gifted to Vlahovic and he wrong-footed the Swiss goalkeeper, which is Gregor Kobel now. Jan Sommer was fortunately injured for the Swiss. And for a time, Serbia were heading into the last 16. We wouldn't have all three of the underlings in Group G exchange qualification places because, unfortunately, when Cameroon took the lead later on in the day, it was unfortunately when Switzerland were already 2-3 up. So we didn't have the same sort of mad dash for the it was still dramatic either way, but it was less so than groups H, certainly from Group E, to be fair, as well. And Group F, it was probably along similar lines to that, really. But let's to in and fro in from those in qualification place. And really, Switzerland could have had a chance to go above Brazil on goals scored had they snatched a fourth late on. But that was all broken up by a lot of fighting. There was, to be fair, this game had a lot of needle into it, and you just come to expect that, especially with what's gone on in the build-up to the game, with the Serbian flags, with disputed territories, let's say, hung up in dressing rooms, and of course the charges and the fallout from the previous game in the previous World Cup. To be fair, Switzerland, they're usually one of these placid, stoic teams that you just solid. They'll get to the last 16. They'll probably get beaten, and they'll go out with a whimper. Here they came out swinging. Really, it was not literally, although that was probably more so in injury time at the end of the second half. And really, they looked as though the more composed, the more measured team. Serbia definitely looked like they had an edge about them, as though they desperately needed the angst of about winning this game. Whereas Switzerland started off very calmly. They had the likes of Braylon Bolo and Granit Xhaka both testing Vanya Milinkovic-Savic inside the first minute. And Bolo could have scored inside 15 seconds or something daft. And Mbolo was a fantastic threat on the counter-attack. And Switzerland, really, with Gibraltar, with Ruben Vargas as well, the propensity for them to counter-attack in the coming rounds when they're almost certainly going to be the underdogs against Portugal. And if they get through that, Spain in another quarter-final against them. And they took them to penalties last time in the Euros, didn't they? So they're going to have a great outlet, a great outball in Braylon Bolo as well. He's certainly no Haris Seferovic, that is for sure. No offence, Haris, but we don't really get along. It was great composure from Gibraltar as well to assist Jordan Shaqiri for the calm finish for the first one. It's slight deflection off Pavlovic, but you won't care, will he? And Shaqiri finished with aplomb, and it was all hands to the pump for Serbia there. We just needed Granit Xhaka, really, to score to complete the scorers from the game in 2018. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately. It wasn't to be. And, Shaqiri was brilliant on that right-hand side. He had that rest against Brazil, came back into it and looked, he pulled out the best performance that he's pulled out all tournament, really. He provided Braylon Mbolo with a well-deserved goal. I've always rated him and always has this incessant potential that he just never seems to find, especially in a tournament with Switzerland. I hope that's about to change, because he is... of course, the hopes of Switzerland have been carried on the backs of Granit Xhaka and Jerdan Shaqiri, Braylon Bolo should be the third man in all of that. And of course, they've got a great defence, that goes without saying. But Braylon Bolo should be front and centre of Switzerland's successes for the next 5-10 years, if possible. He was a vehicle to move Switzerland up the pitch, and he did so for the wonderful team move. And yes, Switzerland aren't fashionable, they're always this obdurate, stoic team who just get the job done, going to the last 16, the European Mexicans, I called them in the preview. But here, for this team goal, they were absolutely stunning. Of course, Braylon Bolo gets them off the pitch, he lays it off, and it's a lovely little give and go, and then Remo Freuler finds the net. It's on a par with Serbia's third against Cameroon as well, and it was just a fantastic goal all round for the Swiss. He could have given Switzerland their fourth. It was a highly entertaining game. Definitely, if you watch the Brazil game, I'd definitely go and seek out the longer highlights of Serbia and Switzerland, especially if you like a bit of fighting in your football as well. Went a long way towards the end of the game as well. I felt as though Serbia could have had a penalty in the second half. Alexander Mitrovic, it was a dive, to be fair, but the handball from an outstretch, I think it was Fabian Scher, but... yeah, I felt as, to be fair, Serbia didn't deserve to get back into the game. I was preferring Serbia to get through to the last 16, something a bit different. They're a bit more exciting than Switzerland. Also, the stereotype goes, but Switzerland more than deserved this 3-2 win. And over the course of the three games, especially with Serbia's collapse against Cameroon, you've got to say that Switzerland deserve that knockout stage berth a lot more than Serbia do. So it's probably, for football's sake, a correct decision, or a correct outcome, really, that Switzerland have eked out the 6 points. And perhaps just a shame that they weren't able to get top spot, although from an England perspective, it keeps Brazil in the other half of the draw, doesn't it? Although it does bar us from Brazil-Spain in a potential quarterfinal, and Brazil-Portugal in the last 16, which would have been incredible, really, to see. And on to Brazil, we had the likes of only Éder Militão and Fred remaining. So again, like Portugal, like France, they rung the changes with top spot all but sealed, although it really went down to the wire in the end. And they, like France, like Portugal, they fell because of those changes. And like France and like Portugal, we can't really glean too much of this. It's just the second string, everybody's been raving about them and saying, oh, they could win the World Cup, there would be a contender, the second, third teams, like they say about France. But when the reality hits and those second and third teams come out to play, it's not nearly the same sense of fluidity, the same team pulling in the same direction that it is when they are all coming off the bench and there's momentum and they are firing out of the blocks against tired opponents. So that is why football is a squad sport, and just having 15, 16 players who are absolutely world class and bringing them off the bench, not necessarily having to start some in some games and others in others. It's mainly why Brazil is so dangerous, is those types of players like Martinelli, like Gabriel Jesus, like Anthony, Rodrigo, etc., etc., etc. They're more dangerous coming off the bench, and it showed really in this game. There was no fluency to it. Gabriel Martinelli, I felt, was by far and away Brazil's standout attacking player. Yes, Anthony had a few flicks and tricks. Rodrigo, I felt, was quite good at progressing the ball. But Martinelli was the only one really taking a chance at goal against a Cameroon goalkeeper who looked shaky in the previous game. He looked shaky here. I don't know how he didn't concede that one chance, which was fairly timid, straight down his throat, really, and he sort of palmed it to one side and just scooped it out for a corner. I have no idea how he kept that out, not because it was a good save, but because it just looks calamitous, really. It was quite the goalkeeping performance. But at the end of the day, Cameroon won out, and maybe they probably deserved to. There was a lot of chances for Brazil to attack Alex Telles' side, most in particular. They very rarely took it, though, the Cameroonians, indomitable lions, as they are known, very rarely utilised that right-hand side. And to be fair, the goal comes from the right-hand side, but nonetheless, when everything had changed in terms of players and the shape of the game with Brazil trying to get that win on the board. And it was a fantastic ball for Vincent Aboubakar, gets on the end of the cross. And we had our second red card of the World Cup in bizarre circumstances. Yes, you get carried away with the moment. He didn't seem annoyed to have received the red card because had Serbia then scored in the last minute, Cameroon would have been through. And yes, they looked a bit better with two men up top. They played in a 4-4-2 as opposed to a 4-3-3, which they used for the majority of the groups. But they'd have been the captain, the talisman, would have been out for the last 16, and he didn't seem that bothered. Oh, crazy. What an end. We've had two red cards at this World Cup, and both have been absolutely wild, to be fair. And Brazil, they took a while to get going. They have done all tournament, but you can't, like France and like Portugal, you can't really judge them off the back of this. It was almost a dead rubber, barring any miracles, which nearly happened for Serbia. And obviously Cameroon got their most famous win. It's a good job on that for Cameroon. They've won their first group stage game in the World Cup for 20 years. And the opponents then were Saudi Arabia in a 1-0 win. Here it's Brazil in a game that, unfortunately, a bit like Tunisia as well, and a bit like Mexico. They win, but unfortunately they are out. But we have our 16 teams here. But before we jump that gun, before we look at the last 16s, we're going to look at Group H, where we had some almighty drama. Stick around with us on that one. Welcome back, and Group H was where the drama was to be had, where Ghana, in a roundabout sort of way, kind of did get a little bit of revenge over Uruguay by dragging them down with them into the bottom two places. And South Korea, against all odds, we asked for one normal day of FIFA World Cup. It did not happen, at least not in the afternoon, early evening anyway, of what is day 13. So let's start with Ghana 0, Uruguay 2, shall we? Ghana made a couple of changes, mainly at fullback. Ramon Babat was in, and Lamptey was out as well. The clamour for De Arrascaeta was finally answered with Luis Suarez in, and it was the number 10, De Arrascaeta, who was the difference maker, at least in terms of one game of football, 90 minutes of football. A lot of clamour for him to start. And if you remember, if you've been keeping up on our YouTube shorts, we planted him in there at left wing. It was more of a number 10 position, and as Darwin Nunez took up the left wing berth. But regardless, he was in. Finally, he didn't play, I don't think he played a single minute of the first two games. He certainly didn't start them anyway. And he was deployed from that midfield three. We saw at very start how he could drive forward with the ball. And it looked as though the clamour was going to continue, going to reward him with a place in the last 16. Certainly after he pounced on Luis Suarez's shot, nodded it in from a couple of yards, very simple goal. But the second one was absolutely superb, out of this world. Luis Suarez just touches it on, and a first-time volley into the corner. Great volley, great goal, and he was taking home all the headlines. What with Portugal 1-0 up, and seemingly no way that South Korea could turn that contest around. It did seem that with that second goal and a lot of defensive jumping in, and Ghana easily played through because they were closing down very quickly and recklessly, that this game probably meant a lot more to Ghana than it did to Uruguay. It still echoes, more than an echo, of 2010 and that fateful quarter final in Johannesburg, and the Luis Suarez handball, and the fact that Luis Suarez assisted both goals for De Arrascaeta it just rubbed a little bit more salt into those wounds for Ghana, who now knew that they needed two goals to qualify for the last 16. And, well, they had the best chance of the first quarter of the match, didn't they? Andre Ayew onside thanks to a trailing Uruguayan leg, and Mohamed Kudus was tripped in the box by Sergio Roche, the Uruguayan goalkeeper, quite rightly given as a penalty, a long VAR check. And it was Andre Ayew, the only Ghanaian survivor from 2010, who missed out on that quarterfinal thanks to a yellow card suspension. He stepped up, and just like Asamoah Gyan, in glaring symmetry for all to see, his tame penalty was saved by the Uruguayan goalkeeper, and Uruguay, of course, after that then marched on and scored the two goals, which effectively killed this game as a contest. You still had Mohamed Kudus, you know, still had the ability to break the lines and burst forward from midfield into attack. Once again, I was pretty disappointed with Iñaki Williams. He didn't appear to offer much, but with the Ayews off, I thought Bakari, the goal scorer out last time out, he was on, and he was quite good from the right, I felt. Scooter shot wide early on. He did inject something into it, whilst the halftime score from the other game was 1-1. And really, Portugal were on top. South Korea didn't appear to offer anything, much of anything, really, in the second half going forward, at least in the first part of the second half. So it felt as though Uruguay were tailing off into a relatively comfortable elimination for Ghana, qualification for themselves. They felt as though they could have had a couple of penalties. Cavani tripped, which probably wasn't, and then Darwin Nunes felt as though he was tripped by Daniel Amati, but he got just a sliver, just enough on the ball, and the referee did go to VAR. He rejected the penalty, which obviously consternation for the Uruguayans. And it just feels as though this is Uruguay-Ghana inextricably linked by drama, through penalties. And that carried on in the second half through the failure to award that penalty. And with South Korea then scoring in the last minute as well. And South Korea's game was about 8 or 9 minutes ahead because they started the second half a bit earlier, and there was a lot of added time in the first half in this game. Uruguay then realised, oh no, it's 7-8 minutes to go, plus what was, I think, 10 minutes added on, all in all, after the allotted time, to find that third goal to qualify. But Uruguay, they were conceding chances at will. Remember, Ghana still had to score two to qualify themselves, so it was a bit like a basketball match in the end. You had Semenya, he had one chance to reduce the deficit, but he skewed it wide. Mohamed Kudus had one palmed off the post. Now, the perfect scenario here for South Korea was Ghana scoring one and then not having enough, because Ghana scoring one, Uruguay would need to score two. Didn't happen, of course. End of the game, Ghana, it was essentially about dragging Uruguay down with them. And the goalkeeper made some incredible saves. One from Cavani, which I'm pretty sure would have been disallowed for offside. But regardless, it was an incredible save from a header. And there's a couple of great blocks in there by Salisu, Amati. And if it wasn't direct revenge and Ghana go out at the same time that Uruguay do, at least they managed to stop them from qualifying for the last 16, which would have been a mouthwatering all-South American tie between Brazil and Uruguay. But it is now Brazil, well, we should expect. I'm recording this before Group G. I could be well off, and it could be Switzerland, but I severely doubt it. But this is the FIFA World Cup. One normal day, etc., etc. So South Korea beat a much-changed Portuguese lineup. Six changes for the Portuguese, Seleção, of course. Meanwhile, Lee Kang-in made it on the pitch from the off, and one of the many changes for Portugal, Ricardo Horta scored the sole Portuguese goal. He does play centrally for Braga, but he was deployed from the right here in what was a bit of a change of shape from Fernando Santos, moved to what won him a trophy in the first place, the Euro 2016, and 4-4-2, which he deployed there, and Horta was there on the right midfield. Pretty decent finish as well, lovely curling effort from Adalo, as this Adalo looked very good on the right. I felt João Cancelo, one of the few survivors, he looked much better on the left, and really, it was a 1-0 scoreline for Portugal that they really deserved, that they didn't really look like surrendering. And from then on in, South Korea needed that Japanese spirit, didn't they? Japan, of course, who had gained both of their wins against elite European opposition, coming from behind at half time. But South Korea, they did get that goal to drag things level before halftime. Of course, Kim Jin-sun, who has been incredible down that left-hand side, he found the net early on, but it was clearly offside. He loves getting forward. I absolutely love him. Team of the tournament for me already, irrespective of if they would have been eliminated or not. But they did find their goal from a set piece to equalise. It looked as though that was going to be one of the very rare avenues that South Korea could find their goal from. And after Cristiano Ronaldo came off, South Korea grew a little bit into it without really threatening like they were gonna get that goal. And finally, we saw the introduction of one Hwang Hee-chang, and well, it came from a set piece, but it didn't come from a Portugal set piece. It was headed out to Song Hyun-min, who sprung the counter attack. Hwang Hee-chang was there. He made the absolutely perfectly timed run to beat the Portugal defender, slip one in for himself. A 90th minute. I didn't think we could top or at least add to the drama that we had last night. But wow, we got it in spades. And really, everybody was talking about, oh, is it going to be Ghana? Is it going to be Uruguay? Nobody was talking about whether South Korea could qualify or not. And they snuck in whilst Ghana and Uruguay were stumbling all over each other with VAR and penalties. Here we are. And we have South Korea, Japan and Australia in the last 16, all from AFC. That is the first time that's ever happened, that they've had three Asian nations in the knockout phase. They're all on the same half of the draw, so we could get a Japan-South Korea quarterfinal. Highly unlikely, but we could. We could get, likewise, Australia in the semi-final against one of them. Again, highly unlikely, but it is possible. Anything is possible. And in terms of the last 16, well, there's two matches. No break, no rest for the wicked. We have got two previews to line up for you after this short break. Welcome back. Two last 16 ties. Yes, the knockout phase is upon us today. No day's rest. No. This is a condensed World Cup, so you players do not get a rest. In one corner, we have the Netherlands versus USA. In the other, we have Argentina versus Australia. One is certainly more exciting than the other, I would say. Netherlands versus USA, probably in terms of the last 16 draw as a whole, one of the more intriguing battles. I feel as though USA have been very good in the midfield. Netherlands will be need to be a lot more incisive against what is an incredibly high-energy USA team. Of course, USA will be hoping on the fitness of Christian Pulisic after he came off at halftime and was unable to continue against Iran. If he's on the pitch, all right, even though if he isn't, they can always rely on Brendan Aaronson and others to spring that offside trap and maybe get another shock here against the Dutch. And obviously a win for the USA would equal their modern day, I suppose, record best performance in the World Cup when they reached the quarterfinals in 2002. Of course, we are a world away from 1930 and somewhat of a shock semi-final for USA after winning a group and then getting absolutely annihilated 6-1 in that semi-final. Regardless, the Netherlands will be under Louis van Gaal, of course. Very, very good defensively. Attacking-wise, I'm still not sure on them. But you would say that prioritising defensive work, prioritising clean sheets is what made the Netherlands and Louis van Gaal so good in 2014 in terms of when we got to the knockout phase. USA, we've been banging the drum that they are incredibly inexperienced, and maybe that will tell in this last 16. What a game to start the knockout phase with. I'm thoroughly excited by that one. And then Argentina, Australia is after that. Two teams that are always next to each other on video games, if you're playing a World Cup video game. A game that just does not have the feel of a knockout stage tie, but Australia, for me, have been, if not one of the, like, in terms of numbers, not the best defensive team, but in terms of spirit and in terms of just having the fire, the desire to put in a defensive display for the ages, one that Argentina will know all too well coming up against Saudi Arabia and losing that one. Australia have looked pretty good defensively. They look fairly incisive on the counter, as Denmark will tell you, as even France will tell you, as their goals against them came from counter-attacks. And that is something for Argentina to worry about. So although they did break down a similarly obdurate team in Poland in the final game of the group stages, we have Harry Suter versus Lionel Messi, which will be a battle for the ages. And I would love to see, I don't particularly have a favourite for this one way or the other, but I would love to see Australia take the lead and just to see what would happen then. And of course, this is supposed to be Lionel Messi's World Cup. And of course, these four teams all have the potential of meeting one another in the quarterfinal. Would you like to see USA versus Australia or Netherlands versus Argentina? It's both fairly tantalising propositions, of course, for very, very different reasons. Of course, we'll cover those two games. We'll preview the big one as well for tomorrow, which we won't mention by name, but we have got all the same coverage going forward through the last 16 right through to the final. Hope you join us for it. Thank you very much for listening and for watching over there on YouTube. And until then, thank you very much and see thee.
Podcast Network.